has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. Team.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
Did you push yourself to be great today? Did you do it? If you didn't do it, you lost today.
Don't let that team stand in the way. Go away.
Menace to...
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for joining us. Menace to the Midwest, where we analyze the top football area, region in the country, in my opinion at least. Talking a lot of Ohio State football, Notre Dame football, Michigan football, really the Big Ten and Notre Dame, and also some outlier teams that are non-FBS. But thank you for joining us. As I've mentioned several times, we're going to put all of these shows on our singular platform now to try to help people find them, make it easier. The platform has exploded again. Here's what happened. It kind of, obviously, it exploded initially beyond anyone's wildest imagination. And then it started to kind of plateau, and now it's hitting another explosion, which is cool, because that's what you look for. You look for spikes, and we appreciate the interest. Mentioned on Menace to Society earlier, I want to mention on this platform, if you're interested in joining, providing written content, or really in any facet that you think you could be a part of this, and you have a burning desire to join it, reach out to me at Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com, and I'll add you to the email list. We'll keep you updated on what we're doing, where we're growing, and we'll try to make you a part of it if you're interested. And also, if you're interested in sponsorship or advertising, email sponsorship at menacetosocietypodcast.com. Oh, big news right now in the undergrounds. In not the transfer portal, but like the black hole. The undergrounds, the message boards.
That's
good,
where
good old message boards.
You can waste hours on these things.
I am dubbing it the meltdown in Michigan.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, we'll talk about the game that they have this week and how that could go if they lose and how it could attribute to the meltdown.
It could be Chernobyl.
But the fans and the message board warriors in Michigan are just losing it right now over what's going on with their program and recruiting.
And really, what's going on with Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Is they look at the success Ohio State's having.
The real issue here is they got their... Jesus Christ returns, right? They got their head coach rejuvenation, and they got their guy Jim Harbaugh.
He's a Michigan man,
and so like
they got their Urban Meyer
in their mind. That's what they thought. In their mind, they got their guy, and then Ohio State happened to get one of the top two coaches of our lifetime, and it's like always been kind of a. Dang it. Like Harbaugh may be the third best ever, but they got the second or first best ever. And so it's the minute that everything happened and Zach Smith gave Michigan their spark of life, I guess. Thank you to me somehow. They felt like, all right, now it's our time.
No, that's exactly what it is.
And the problem is they are watching a team that has only enhanced and improved on the past couple years, and their team has even went down a little bit, and there is just a complete meltdown in Michigan.
They are scared.
I think it's crazy to see, because you're exactly right. Urban left and they're like, okay, we got our guy. They lost their guy. Now's our chance.
It's going to be the 90s again.
Yeah,
right?
And then they're seeing the wheels turn, and then Ryan Day comes in and picks two of their coaches up and brings them on staff at Ohio State. And then they go, well, those coaches were the reason we didn't win, so we're going to be better now. And then they're seeing then the defense just killing it.
I want you to pull up that one message board post that the one guy, what's his name on Twitter?
J-Book?
Yeah, that's who I saw it. He tweeted it. And I've literally seen seen 30 message board posts. So there's, we could go on for days. We could do a whole show just showing you the message board posts. But read the one to me that he posted. What did it say?
Oh, yeah. It's talking about recruiting and corners and D tackles. And the guy posted, he goes, just alarming to me that we need both corners and D tackles very badly, but aren't casting the net out to anybody in the meantime. Meanwhile, Ohio State's over here flipping the number 15 corner in the class on top of already having the number 4 corner in the class and another top 24/7 safety that'll play corner in college. Right after OSU got a run of corners, they go out and get a D tackle in Jacoby Cohen to go along with Darian Henry. They don't even need these guys. They're just stacking depth anyways. And he goes, I mean, also, Ohio State landed the number 1 wide receiver in the country in back-to-back classes in Wilson and Fleming, and UM isn't even trying to recruit corners. How does this recruiting recipe not end in disaster? Serious question.
So that is a clear meltdown. But I will tell you this, just from my own experience, Michigan has never recruited well nationally. I don't know why people are surprised that you look at the guys they've had, and they've had either there was like Rashawn Gary, national recruit, big time recruit, Jabril Peppers, big time recruit. Outside of that, you could say DPJ, Donovan Peoples-Jones. He was the best receiver in the country. He's also from Michigan, lives in Michigan, plays in Detroit, parents are UM grads. Like, that is a nationally ranked recruit. That's not going out and getting the best in the country. I'm talking about going out and getting Garrett Wilson, or going out and getting Julian Fleming, or going out and getting any Joey Bosa. I'm talking about going out somewhere where you're not supposed to get that guy, and you get him. That's what Ohio State is doing, has done, and Michigan has never done. The only one I could even think of that is in that conversation is Devin Bush. Yeah. And I will tell you, Luke Fickell turned down Devin Bush. That's why we didn't recruit him. That's not a knock on Luke
Fickell. No, I know.
His resume speaks for itself. I'm saying that, and that happens sometimes. So he was a kid that it's not like Alabama and Ohio State was beating down his door. They just did a great job of evaluating him, and he turned out to be a great player. So, I mean, they've never done that. And now people are looking at it like, what's going on? And it's like, it's what's always going on. What do you mean?
Yeah, this guy responded to that guy's question and essentially said what you just said. He goes, first he said, you won't get a serious answer to this question. And then he goes, look, man, Ohio State has consistently had multiple first-round talent guys on both defense and offense. Well, not just first-round, top 5 draft picks. And Michigan has not had a first-rounder or has had a few first-rounders on defense and only some late day 2 undrafted free agent guys on offense.
I would point to recruiting. Moral of the story. I think I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think one receiver in my entire time at Ohio State, which was what, 7 or 8 years, one receiver that we went head-to-head against, and that was Donovan Peoples-Jones. And that was, what are we talking about?
It's not even fair.
That was over before it started. I never recruited another receiver that was like, I'm looking at Michigan. I was like, oh, okay. So I never felt them at the offensive skill position. We never felt them at the quarterback position. We never felt them at many positions. They did sign some offensive linemen. There's some defensive guys they signed that were really good. But like I said, most of them were regional battles. There was few that were national battles.
I got to read this one because the guy goes, you want to know how we beat them? Here's the list. They stubbornly ride a bad quarterback, causing someone like Burrows to transfer. They whiff on some running back talent. They whiff on some O-line development. Florida and Texas start paying more, so Browning, Okuda, NPF, Wade, Wilson, etc. stay home. Bosa's decide to stop having children, and we develop a day 2 quarterback and day 2 running back.
Oh, there's the formula.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
All right, that's enough. Enough of the message board meltdown in Michigan. It is melting down, and with a poor performance Saturday, get ready for Chernobyl. But I can't even blame them. I mean, you're talking about their rival, right? The opposite end of their Jesus to their devil. The opposition is 91-9 in the last 100 games. That's outrageous. I mean, they ties Alabama. There's no one else in the country that's even remotely close. I didn't even look up Michigan's record, and I won't do that to any of the Michigan fans that listen, because I'm not trying to pile on you. We just went for 5 minutes on, and it already made you feel like shit. My bad. Well, let's talk about the biggest game in the Midwest, and I don't think it's even close. That's a top 25 matchup for the Buckeyes at night in the Horseshoe. And the narrative around this game is so huge.
Is it supposed to rain?
I don't know. I haven't checked the forecast, but if it does, I will drastically change my prediction from my own experiences.
Yeah, it's not going to be freezing cold and rainy. That's good.
I will tell you this. There is a much better offensive staff in this game if it does rain.
Do you have Zeke, and can you just not give him the ball, I guess?
No. They don't, but if they wanted it, he could dress on the sideline and not give it to him.
Exactly.
But I will tell you, this is primed for a big, big game. And I will say this, before I even get into predictions, I'll spoil it a little bit. I don't think this is a huge challenge for Ohio State overall, but I think there are several key things that are going to be indicative of where Ohio State is at. And we'll get into those now, but I will tell you, black jerseys at night in the horseshoe with a fourth string offensive tackle trying to block Chase Young and a converted D tackle moving over to guard right? against Davon Hamilton is not a good day for Sparty.
No, then it's going to be a blackout too, and fans are going to be crazy.
Yeah, well, it's also the first night game in the horseshoe, and we'll see. Columbus is a very civil city, but. But Buckeye Nation might have a drink or two before that game.
In my
experience, a night game in the horseshoe rivals any game in the country. And the crowd is just on an they're juiced up. Some may say some liquid courage. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'd never tailgated at Ohio State, so I'm not sure if people drank before the game.
But I think you're sure of that.
I'm pretty sure.
I've been to a tailgate.
I'm pretty sure I can make an educated guess, but I will say this. It is, it'll rival any atmosphere in the country.
Well, I've heard a lot of people hating on the black jerseys. What is your take on the black jerseys?
Well, people need to, it's a lot like the pay for likeness. People, whether you like it or not, you better get over it because it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and I get the traditionalists, but moral story is, you know what traditionalists really like?
Winning.
And you know what fuels winning? Recruiting. Mm-hmm. So if you really love the Buckeyes and want to see a national championship, get over it.
Well, there's other people out there that say, well, Alabama doesn't wear black jerseys, you know.
That's fine.
Good for Alabama.
Well, and you know what? I'm not here to criticize their recruiting, but if they did, it might give them a little boost in some aspect. I mean, you look at Oregon, and it's the greatest example of why you should do it at least once a year is how did Oregon ever become relevant? And it is solely because of uniforms and facilities, and it's the ultimate testament to why you would ever do it. I don't care who you are, is Oregon. Because if they can increase their spot in the national landscape just solely by those factors, and you have the money, which both programs we just mentioned do, you should do it once in a while and still keep your brand relevant and don't always make. My biggest criticism for a while there was it's always the Michigan game. Like, are we never going to have a Michigan game where there's traditional uniforms on both sides? And then fortunately, they broke that trend, and it was like, all right, well, we'll do it for this Nebraska game or this Penn State game or whatever. And it's like, all right, good. As long as, like, the latest picture in traditional uniforms isn't from 2005.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to see Ohio State versus Michigan in traditional uniforms.
Yeah, and the other thing I say is stick to your school colors. You know, your traditional colors, like black is one of Ohio State's colors. But you see Michigan State going with this neon green, and it's like, that's not a color. Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you. But
you saw Tulane, the green wave, it was in blue.
Yeah. Like, but, no, don't do that.
Either way, I mean, do what you got to do. If you think it's going to help you in recruiting, God bless you, especially Tulane. No one cares. I mean, honestly, exactly.
We wouldn't have talked about it if they didn't do it, right?
But can you name their traditional uniforms? No.
I would say probably green.
Okay, maybe. You don't even know, though. That's the best point. But let's talk about this matchup. Yeah. So first of all, I just mentioned the huge, huge issue Michigan State has is on their offensive line.
Don't they have like four that are injured?
And the biggest problem is they have a four-string tackle, and Ohio State is so – their defensive staff is so good. They're going to find so many ways to get Chase Young on that tackle. Mm-hmm. Now, I will put a caveat there. Mark D'Antonio's no moron. They're not going to leave that tackle alone on Chase Young, and if they do, my God, Chase Young might double sack production just in this game, maybe the first half. It'll be ugly. But here's the storyline that I think matters, and I don't think it matters as far as how this game, the outcome is, but I think what is relevant here is that Michigan State has a really good defense, and they more importantly, they have a great rushing defense, and Ohio State right now has a little momentum on the offensive line and rushing the ball. But I will tell you this. They got that momentum against Nebraska. We watched it, right? Mm-hmm. Nebraska has the 121st rushing defense in America, the 73rd overall defense in America. So I'm not discounting there is momentum, but I'm telling you right now, this is a huge test.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very different level of defense that you're going to be going against.
Well, if you look at how they grade out and you watch the film, I mean, they're the seventh best overall defense in America. They're the fourth best rushing defense in America. And having been a part of whatever, seven or eight Michigan State games, if there's one thing they're going to come into this game aiming to do, it's to stop Ohio State from running the football. And I don't care who you have outside of that. So this is solely going to be a double test, right? Can Justin Fields play like he's played, which is as the best quarterback in the country, dealing with the fact that Ohio State is going to struggle possibly running the football? That's a huge question. And then the next question is, outside of that, you have to run the ball. You have to find ways to run the ball. Can that offensive line block that front seven? Can Ohio State deal with the schematic ways Michigan State is going to try to stop the run? And can they still run the ball? And what is J.K. Dobbins going to do? Because right now, he is second fiddle to Jonathan Taylor. He's not that elite running back. The run game at Ohio State is right now the 27th rushing offense in the country. And I'm with everyone. I was critical the first three games. Very critical. I saw great growth and improvement in the fourth game. What I want to know is, can that growth continue? Because now that aspect of the game has their first real test of the season. And will it happen? I mean, Ohio State's riding incredible momentum. The fifth best offense in the country, grade-wise. The number one scoring offense in the country. The number one rushing offense in the country. I mean, statistically. Again, 27th grade-wise. Number one statistically. But what they do have, they're throwing... Justin Fields is throwing the ball so efficiently. So I am so excited to see how he does throwing the ball if the run game struggles. And obviously, Ohio State fans hope the run game doesn't struggle, and we don't have to know how that works.
Well, if it does struggle and you have to rely on the pass, I think Dobbins back there doing pass pro has not been very good at all. So what do you do?
Well, and that's a great point. I think he's improved. He's done better in pass pro as the year's gone on, and that was no one's been more critical of his pass protection than me. Mm-hmm. But also, there's ways to get around him not being the best pass protector in America. There's ways to utilize tight ends, which is another group I've been critical of.
Yep.
I mean, there's ways to get around this. And don't get me wrong, Michigan State also has a top 10 pass rush defense in America, grade wise. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're not going to try to get after the quarterback. So this is a huge test on offense for Ohio State now. On defense for Ohio State, this is not a huge test.
No, not at all.
What do you mean? Brian Lewerke leads the Big Ten in passing.
That's great. That's great.
But he won't be able to throw the ball because he'll be on his back.
Well, I won't even say that. I will tell you this. It's going to be a test. It's a complete mismatch when Ohio State's on defense. They don't have the skill on the perimeter to go after Jeff Okuda or Damon Arnett or Sean Wade and with Jordan Fuller back in the deep safety, kind of patrolling the deep part of the field. I don't think they have the skill to do that. I also don't think they have the skill to beat anyone one-on-one when it comes to that matchup. And the only way you're going to block Chase Young, which you're not going to, but, nope. But the only way you're going to help Brian Lewerke get a second to throw the ball is to chip him with the running back, help with a tight end, slide to him. There's a number of ways to do it. And it's a matter of, all right, now you're committing more people to one guy, mm-hmm. which is the benefit of having a great player. If you want to try to eliminate him from just taking over the game, you're going to have to commit a couple people to him. And then when you do, those other people you have better be able to beat some people one-on-one.
Exactly.
And my contention is this. If they want to stop Chase Young, how are they going to stop Jonathan Cooper, Davon Hamilton, B.B. Landers? How are they going to stop those guys? And that's the real question here. So I think it's a huge mismatch for Ohio State when they're on defense, and I think it's also a huge test. And like I said, we can get to the outcome now. I think Ohio State will win by 28 points, 24 points. I do think they'll win pretty big. Yep. But what I think is more important to that for Buckeye fans and for the national landscape and for fans of Big Ten football is, how do they handle these slight tests in this game? Because there's going to be tests. There is some matchups that are at least even. And so though Ohio State will find ways to overcome those, I want to see how those matchups play out.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm looking for and excited to see is how the receivers do. Because they'll be going up against D'Antonio's, famous man coverage defense. And I just don't think Michigan State has the athletes to hang with these receivers. If they can get separation and the O-line can give Fields enough time to get the ball to them, I think the receivers could have a huge day.
Yeah, I mean, well, the receivers are going to need to have a huge day regardless, because I would say this, Ohio State's not going to run the ball all over Michigan State. I mean, they may run the ball well, and we may come back on Sunday and record a show and say, wow, I did not see them running the ball that well, but they're not going to dominate them in the run game. They might perform really well, and we might get excited as Buckeye Nation and say that this is what we needed to see. But the receivers are going to have a field day. And the good thing D'Antonio's done, because he used to, you rewind back to 2013-ish, right? Which I know we're talking about now. Now we're in a historical show. But they also had NFL safeties, yeah. first-round corners.
They had great corners.
They played two defenses. Every snap, it was one of two defenses. And it was either an all-out blitz with this creative coverage, or it was flat zero man coverage, mm-hmm. like stopping the run. And it was dynamic because they had dynamic players in the secondary. So they don't have those. They also had a guy named Pat Narduzzi, who's now at Pitt. And so things changed a lot and have evolved ever since he left. And they still play man coverage, but it's not the D'Antonio defense, the stereotypical what was Michigan State when they were, in the top 10 in the country and in
the playoff.
Going to the playoff.
Yeah.
And
with Darquez Denard or whatever his name was. He was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Trey Waynes and Darquez Denard. And they had some legit safeties. Their linebackers were really good. I mean, they had what was it? I can't remember the one guy's name. They got in trouble for being naked at a frat party and didn't play in the bowl game. I don't know if he was on steroids, but he was reminding me of the guy from the program, Lattimore or whatever his name was. But he was scary. I mean, he painted his face like with face paint. I mean, he was wild.
Was that Jones?
No, no. But anyways, it's a huge test for the Buckeyes. I mean, a huge test in certain aspects. Again, I think it'll be a 21, 24, 28 point victory. There's no way this team comes into the Horseshoe at night, first night game, dark black jerseys, Justin Fields everyone's on fire, defense playing best defense in the country. I mean, there's no way they come in and pull off this upset, barring some bizarre fact.
Again, you mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I've detailed 100 times why that happened in 2015.
I know.
And I don't see that happening again. And again, I mean, I'm going to knock on wood for all the Buckeye fans here. There's one way that a team like this comes in and beats Ohio State, and that's if number one gets hurt on offense.
Ooh. Yeah.
And if that happens...
Don't say that.
Well, I'm just saying. You want to know how it could happen? That's how it could happen.
Yeah.
A lot like in 2015, if you don't hand Zeke the ball, the best player in America, it could happen then.
Yeah, I heard somebody talking about that 2015 game and detailing the stats, and they said, Zeke had 12 carries for 38 yards or 44 yards, and Mike Thomas had 2 catches for 8 yards. And I'm sitting there like, man, that was just bad.
But it was also a poor, poor, poor offensive staff. And I don't think those staffs are even comparable. I mean, I really don't. To Ryan Day's credit, he's not Urban Meyer in the sense that when things don't go well, he's not going to just say run the quarterback every play because we don't know what else to do. And that's the reality of the situation. That's what happened in that game. That's what happened in Virginia Tech. That's what happened a number of times. And Ryan Day's not going to do that. He's going to be calmer than Urban. And I think Kevin Wilson and staff it's like a midget looking up to somebody on stilts compared to Ed Warner and Tim Beck's offense. So moral of the story is I don't think that's going to be the issue this season or any season, but this game is a huge test for Ohio State's O-line, huge test for J.K. Dobbins, huge test for Kevin Wilson and Greg Sestrorawa to put together a run game to attack this defense and to find out, can Ohio State line up against a top 5 rushing defense and run the football? Because they're going to win by 21 points, in my opinion, but they may struggle running the ball. And if they do, that's going to give you a spotlight into what happens when they play in Alabama or an LSU or someone like that, or even a Wisconsin or a Penn State coming down the road, where those teams might have an offense that can breathe and they can stop the run. What is going to happen in that scenario? We're not going to find out what's going to happen in that scenario Saturday, but we might find out a piece of the pie. Yeah. We might see a little bit of what problems could be in Columbus.
Yeah, I think they definitely cover, and I'm going to keep picking them to cover the spread until they prove me wrong.
Yeah, for sure. And the other side of this is that I'm excited to see, and this is the opposite side of that, is I'm excited to watch Ohio State's defense go against a subpar offense and put on a show of complete domination again.
Yep.
And that's what people want to see, because we've seen it over the last 8 years, 9 years. There's times where Ohio State's had a great defense, and they have that one game where it's like, man, they played like crap there. And that's what everyone's looking to see. Is that not going to happen? And I don't see it happening. So that's the second point of contention is, will this defense dominate Michigan State's offense like they should?
I could see that definitely happening.
Well, no, it should happen.
Yeah. I'm saying that I could see the defense scoring a few touchdowns,
Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. A little fumble six.
Maybe, but probably a couple strip sacks for old Chase Young. But anyways, that's definitely the game of the week in the Midwest. A couple other good games to get to, but that is game of the week by far in Columbus. I don't know about you guys, though, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm betting my money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little, try to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag, because no one gives you more ways to win. Between football season, the MLB playoffs, and the start of the NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sideline and get into action. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, to activate the offer. That's double your money. You could bet with free money. That's promo code MENACE to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Speaking of gambling, a game that I was kind of surprised, Michigan, I think the other relevant game, the other top 20 matchup in the Midwest is Michigan-Iowa. Iowa goes to Ann Arbor, and Michigan looks to hopefully capitalize their Rutgers momentum against Iowa, which is, they're 3.5-point favorites at home?
3.5, yeah.
Yeah. That's a traditional noon game in the Big Ten. And it's really going to be a test because Iowa's kind of that undefeated team that no one's even talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's reasons why. I've watched some film on them, and obviously I'm going to watch this game in its entirety. But here's the mismatches that I see that it could be a problem for Michigan and Iowa, really. The first thing is when Michigan's on offense, they have the 81st offense in the country, and Iowa right now is the fifth-ranked defense, total defense, in the country. So that's a huge matchup. And what Michigan has not been able to do the whole year, even kind of Rutgers, was they can't run the ball. I mean, the 94th rushing offense in the country goes against the 10th rushing defense in the country. That should be a huge mismatch in Iowa's favor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it this way. Iowa's defense is 12th in the country at stopping explosive run, stopping explosive runs, and Michigan's offense is 111th in the country at creating them. So this could be a very, very low-scoring game for Michigan when they are on offense, and that's a little scary. I mean, Michigan should be able to throw the ball a little bit on Iowa. I mean, Iowa's still a top 20 pass defense in both passing and pass efficiency, but Michigan definitely has the skill on the perimeter to attack Iowa. It's a matter of can they protect, obviously, number one. Number two, who's going to be the quarterback?
Who's throwing it?
Right. Is Shea Patterson going to be the guy? I heard all year he was going to be the best quarterback in the Big Ten. Now people don't even know if he's a starter. And I'm sure he will be, but it's just further proof that they have major issues, and Josh Gattis has major issues on offense. Now, the caveat to all of that is what Michigan has been doing well is defending the pass, and Iowa also doesn't throw the ball very well. I mean, Michigan's got the third passing defense in the country, and Iowa's walking in there with like the 60th passing offense. So will they be able to pass the ball? Now, what I think they will be able to do is run the ball. That's obviously I've been. Able to, yeah. Man, Iowa's never been a dynamic passing team outside of some tight end stuff and some big personnel pass game. So they're going to roll into town, into Ann Arbor, and say, listen, you have the 89th rushing defense in the country. We kind of built our program 20 years ago on running the football down your throat. So, hey, Jim Harbaugh, let's roll.
Iowa always makes me think of like a lesser Wisconsin. Like every year, that's pretty much what I see from them.
Yeah, they're very similar. I mean, it goes back to regional location.
Exactly.
I mean, Iowa's not going to go recruit South Florida, Texas, and all these places and just have freak athletes running around. So they build to their strength, which is the region that they're in. And Iowa and Wisconsin have similar blueprints. And it's you mm-hmm. build on the talent you have in your, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 hour radius. And I mean, it's not that they don't have skill players. I mean, both Wisconsin and Iowa have had skill players. Shoot, they had a corner last year or 2 years ago that was phenomenal in Iowa. And Wisconsin's had a receiver here and there. They've had a couple DBs and they've recruited a select underrated kid nationally. But they're rolling in there to say, hey, we're tougher than you, we're bigger than you, we're stronger than you, we're going to beat the shit out of you, is what they're coming into Ann Arbor to do.
Yeah, they up in those areas, they have just giant linemen, it seems like. So yeah, you might as well run the ball.
Yeah, and when you look at this game, I think the blueprint is the same for Iowa if you want to beat Michigan. It's run whatever Wisconsin did and do that again.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be the zone, the stretch run and getting the ball in between the tackles and running it down their throats. And then
big personnel.
And the other thing is Nate Stanley's an experienced quarterback who doesn't turn the ball over. He hasn't thrown a pick all year. And if they can limit the turnovers and not turn the ball over and hopefully for them force a couple turnovers, which obviously Michigan has struggled with keeping the ball, I think Iowa could come away with it if they do that.
I mean, the moral story is Iowa had one turnover on the year. One. They've had one fumble. I mean, that's unheard of. It's first in the country. They also have allowed the least number of tackles for loss in the country. And Michigan, that's not been their strength either, creating turnovers or creating tackles for loss or sacks for that matter. I mean, my God, they're 97th in the country in sacks. So they're not a disruptive defense. They're not good against the run. This is one of those matchups, and I know Michigan's favored, but I like Iowa in this game by 7 points. I mean, it's certainly never going to be a blowout, or it shouldn't be. But I think Iowa comes in and kind of shows people that it's not going to show people they're for real, but it's going to show people, listen, we're not some average Iowa team that happens to have 4 wins. We have a really good defense, a good run game, a good run defense, and I don't give a shit who was the preseason Big Ten favorite. Let's come play football in Ann Arbor, and let's play big boy football too, not that Josh Gattis second level spread run read game stuff.
Well, Nate Stanley, he also has a better QBR than Shea Patterson, so... Not that it matters, but...
And I think Iowa slowly just climbed up the top 25. They quietly have gone about their business. I mean, they don't have a signature win. I guess Iowa State would be their signature win, which they only won by one. But they did hold Rutgers to 0 points. They only scored 30 on them, though. So not quite the 52 Michigan put up last week. But, they haven't faced anybody of note other than Iowa State, I guess. But it's just going to go down to... If I was able to control the line of scrimmage and run the football and limit and not turn the ball over and hold on to the ball, it's a time of possession game.
Well, and you just absolutely painted the picture of what Iowa's game always is. And so that's what they always try to do. That's what they always have to do. And that's what they're good at. And that's what's fortunate is they make you play their game. And I mean, Iowa's future, they'll obviously be much more nationally relevant if they can make a statement this week at Michigan. Then they got to have Penn State at home next week. You win those two games, I mean, and all of a sudden you're vaunted into the conversation of you're obviously the team in the West that everyone's talking about, you and Wisconsin. That matchup on November 9th is going to be huge at Wisconsin. So this is the next 2 weeks, you're going to find out where Iowa stands in the Big Ten. If they lose two games, now Wisconsin is the controller in the West, right? And if they pull both of those out, you're looking at a huge matchup in Madison here in November 9th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you're Michigan... this game is huge.
Oh, it's bigger than huge.
I mean, you lose a second game in the Big Ten, you're in trouble.
Well, that's the reality. Michigan loses this game, and God help them if they lose in a commanding fashion. That seed is going to get considerably hotter in Ann Arbor, and then you're looking at a disastrous season for what should have been their chance to fight back to relevancy in Ann Arbor and in Jim Harbaugh's tenure.
Well, when I see like a 3.5 point spread in college football, it just seems like it's just a toss-up game, and whoever's at home is favored then? Like, if this was in Iowa, do you think it'd be a 3-point spread favoring Iowa?
What I really think this is you're talking about a Michigan team that's vastly underperformed, mm-hmm. and is not playing up to par, but you're also dealing with an undefeated Iowa team that hasn't proved anything, hasn't done anything. They're playing really, they're doing what Iowa always does. They're playing well on defense, stopping the run, and have their defense is solid. They're playing well on offense and have a powerful run game. That's the Iowa narrative year in, year out, and they haven't played anyone, so it's one of those questions of how good is Iowa and how bad is Michigan? Because if Michigan's above average and Iowa is typical Iowa, that's going to be a dogfight, and Michigan's probably the better team and probably going to come out on top. It's a matter of, is Iowa better than usual, and is Michigan really as bad as they look? And I think the reality is somewhere in the middle. I think this is going to be a close game, a really close game, and I think this is a chance for Michigan to kind of gain back momentum, and I don't think they're going to be able to run the football, but they have the playmakers, and who knows, maybe they switch up the start at quarterback to spark the offense, and this may be a different team come Thanksgiving.
It's definitely a resume builder, because what is Iowa, 14?
Yeah, in the 14th country?
14, so 4-0.
You blow out a team that's number 14, that's going to look good on paper at least.
Well, it all depends on what Iowa does after that, because they haven't gotten into the meat of the schedule yet.
Either way, whether Iowa ends up being 11-2 or 7-6 or whatever, the moral of the story is if they can win big, that'll create a lot of momentum Michigan.
Exactly.
And that's something to build off of. And Iowa may end up being just average, but the momentum factor could be huge. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for a better version of Michigan come Thanksgiving weekend when they have to play Ohio State at home, that's a way to do it. This game right here is pivotal for the season and really for Jim Harbaugh's tenure.
Exactly.
But a lot is going to play out the next this weekend in the Midwest and nationally. I mean, just check out our Menace to Society show that was already released that details Auburn, Florida, which is a huge matchup. And it's a big weekend in the Midwest and for the Big Ten layout and landscape, how that plays out. And so it's going to be fun to watch. It's fun to see. And it's really going to be fun to analyze those little things we talked about that are going to dictate a lot or predict a lot of where some of these teams can go and really where Jim Harbaugh stands right now. But I just wanted to thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in to both episodes. Like I've mentioned on both shows, and I'll stop mentioning at some point, we're all on one platform now. So we appreciate you subscribing, rating us, giving us 5 stars, and also reaching out to us and giving us feedback. Hopefully over the next month or so, this platform continues to grow and takes that next step, because we've experienced tremendous growth and we're excited about it. So thanks for tuning in, and let's watch some football this weekend. I'm excited.
Gil Elliott, and he's got an opening. Elliott off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown, 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller headed for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on a run once, we're going to keep him on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on a run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today, we're going to win.
Menace to...